Welcome to the DHF podcast. DHF stands for Disciple Heritage Fellowship, and we're a group of churches helping one another with pastoral care, ongoing training, and of course, this podcast. We're glad to have you back if you've listened before. If not, this is your first time. We're glad to have you too. And with me this time is somebody a little different. Drew, why don't you say hi?
Hello, I'm Drew McClellan. I've been on a couple other podcasts earlier. I am the senior pastor at First Christian Church, Port Arthur, Texas, and a fellow DHF board member with Sam.
Like Drew said, I get to serve on the board. For those of you that don't know me or are new to the podcast, and I pastor at the Fountain Christian Church in the land of California. And I'm a Kentucky boy, so this is a faraway land for me. But it's great to get a chance to just chat with other DHF pastors. And today we have with us a chaplain. We're going to kind of have a chat with a chaplain. And I want to introduce to you Monty Bowers. Monty, why don't you tell us where you pastor and then also what you've been doing for, I guess you've been home for a little bit, but before that.
Right. Okay. So Monty Bowers, I pastor West Twin Grove Christian Church. We're out on the cornfields on the west end of Bloomington, Illinois. And then I've been a chaplain, been with the Illinois National Guard for 15 years, been a chaplain for probably 11 of that, chaplain candidate prior to that, and then was enlisted for a couple of years. As far as being chaplain right now, I am the brigade chaplain for the 404th Maneuver Enhancement Brigade, which is out of Normal, Illinois. And as far as last year, I spent most of it in Africa at Camp Lemonnier as part of Joint Task Force Horn of Africa. That's a two-star command over there.
So what kind of things do you do as a chaplain while you're in the National Guard here, still stationed here?
Yeah, so here, and it really doesn't change in terms of, you know, the baseline stuff is soldier care. And then, you know, we do provide religious services. So sometimes stateside, that might not be as much of an emphasis if you're only on 2 days of duty for a guard chaplain. But, you know, you do 2 weeks of annual training, that becomes much more important. And then overseas, it can really be important. You might be the one lifeline. So a lot of soldier care. Soldiers bring all kinds of issues with them. And then that part. And then as you get up in rank, what I discovered overseas is you do a lot more of advisement for the command. And that can be on religious issues that impact mission. It can be internal stuff or it can be external things that have to do with your environment where you're working. And then did a lot of engagement too with religious leaders in some of those countries where we operate.
What does that look like as a local pastor? What's that impact there? What's the difference? Or does one feed into the other? Maybe that's the better way of asking.
I think they do, but it's not always an easy fit. When I look at the Illinois chaplaincy, there are only a handful of us that are actively in pastorates. And part of it's because, you know, drill weekends do fall on weekends. And you get 2 weeks out of the summer where you're going to be gone. And if you want to actually have a vacation too, you know, and have a life or, you know, maintain your spiritual health, there's other time that you got to take off. So that's one of the big impacts. But, you know, you do get a lot of training on the chaplain side. I mean, it helped pay for my seminary. And then you do a lot of postgraduate training, including I'm a suicide intervention trainer, have been for quite a number of years. And that all came through the National Guard side. So sometimes there's a benefit that you bring to the church, but there's also that struggle as far as time and having to bring in other people. And you get deployed. That was a lot of time away where we had to have an interim and then pulpit supply throughout. So they do feed into each other. And I think if you've got church time too, that makes you a better chaplain. I think they work well together, but it can be difficult for the local church.
I found, so like I said, I did 10 years in the Navy and I did a lot of human resource type stuff. And so I found for me that it helps with some of the social issues because we handle them differently on the military side as you do in the church side. But I think it helps you, and I'm at this, is, let me form this as a question. Do you think that it helps you deal with multiple walks of life, in the local church and maybe help you see things that aren't necessarily as black and white as we like to see them in the pastorate?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, when you're in the local church, you know, and people church hop and do things, but typically you come from a common background, common theology, you know, all that sort of stuff. And in the military, that's not true. I'm the chaplain for everybody within my command, and they can be of a different religion. They can have all kinds of differing views, and they're still yours. You know, I always like to compare it to that idea of a parish. You know, that idea was geographic, you know, and everybody within that geographic area was yours. And that's true of a chaplain. And I like to talk about, we like to talk about freedom of religion, but I like to talk about freedom of conscience. Wherever somebody's conscience lies, what their value takes them to, one of our roles is to preserve their ability to do that. We have kind of a rubric, perform or provide. So being an independent Christian church pastor, I represent a certain flavor of theology, a certain flavor of Christianity, and I perform services that way. And when I pray with somebody, I pray that way, but I provide opportunities for everybody else. And if somebody's walking on their rights, whether it's their freedoms or whether they're maybe using their position to foist their views off on other people, we're there as a chaplain corps to define those boundaries in a lot of ways. And that's where we advise the command a lot of times on internal issues too. So yeah, I think doing that, taking care of people regardless of what they believe, you got to be careful not to become a social worker. We have folks that can do that, but you have to speak to a broader experience set. And honestly, I think I've learned a lot about different Christian backgrounds too, and have come to value them more, a little less black and white. I went to Lincoln Christian, and even in talking about worship and historic expressions of worship, you know, you learn that some things that maybe aren't part of our tradition had a deeper meaning for people. And I found that I bring more high church elements into my chapel services, because I maybe have Lutherans, and some part of that really speaks to them, you know, it helps ground them. And it kind of helps you bring meaning back into the things that you do at your local church too. You have to think about it a little bit more.
So to follow up on that question, a little bit more, I understand it working with kind of inside of our faith, how that could work out. You know, I worked at a college campus ministry, and I had people from all walks, including, you know, Catholic, and as a very Protestant area, you know, sometimes other ministries, that was a challenge, but we worked together well. But how do you work with folks that are outside of the Christian faith?
Sure. That can be a twofold thing. When it's internal to the military, say I've got a Muslim soldier, you know, it might be that we go somewhere and they need a meal accommodation. Same thing with a Jewish, you know, soldier. It could be worship accommodation. Depending on where we go, if it's stateside, you know, I might be able to get them to a service for Protestant side and service for Catholic, you know, get them to Mass. And we might just be arranging transportation. You know, we might find out, hey, we've got a synagogue locally, and we're going to put it out for our Muslim soldiers for our Jewish soldiers, for synagogue. Hey, we can get you here. And we make sure they have that opportunity to express their faith no matter where they're at. So that's the perform part, is what I can do as far as a chapel service. And then the provide is giving them those other things. And then, as far as interacting outside of, so say in Africa, we were in Djibouti, which is 96% Muslim. And there were things about that impacted what we did. You know, a lot of the local contractors that came in maybe did the dining hall, the galley. There are Muslim soldiers and you know, prayers 5 times a day. And if that became an issue, you know, we might engage with local imams, or engage with, there's a local ministry of Islamic affairs there, and try and take care of those kinds of issues. you know, without getting too specific, I could, there's a couple that I did deal with. So, you know, we have to have a breadth too of knowledge of other faiths and what can impact them. And, you know, you don't want to offend people. I think one of the commonly known things working in the Middle East, you know, you have logistics, you have people running convoys to get supplies here, there, wherever. And one of the early things they learned is you don't drive a convoy through a village during prayer time. You know, you just adjust your schedule accordingly. And so that's the kind of advisement that can sometimes come. It can be very practical, and sometimes it can be deeply nuanced too. You know, it has to do with what these differing beliefs are and how that carries over to the culture. So yeah, twofold answer. There's internal and then there's external issues involved.
While you were in Djibouti, did you get a chance to interact with local Christians, maybe learn anything from them?
We did. Yeah, it was very interesting. And you have to be careful because you're there for a particular mission and, you know, taxpayers' money. So it's not for me to go running around and, you know, seeing whatever I want to see. But, you know, we do care about the local population. We have a good relationship with them. So, and one of the things we do is provide our soldiers an opportunity to get out and to express their faith. So one of the things that we participated in was something called Caritas, which is a Catholic charity. And it's expressed differently across the globe, depending on the needs. But in Djibouti, it was essentially a ministry to street kids, you know, that didn't have a home. And it would provide them a safe place during the day. We would take people over there. And just, you know, there's kind of this inherent need and right to play for children. You know, God imprinted that on all. It doesn't matter what culture you're born into. So we would get them over there and play basketball with them. There were other coalition allies that maybe would come in and do language lessons, things like that. And I think just that ability to express your love of mankind, no matter what the background is, in spite of language barriers and all kinds of things, was very instructive. And then I was able to engage with a local Protestant congregation. And in that case, I was more or less networking with non-government organizations doing charitable stuff over there. But to see people come from across, you know, Northern Africa and various parts and engage in worship together, you know, from that spoke to me quite a bit. You know, we had people from Ghana, people from Yemen, people like myself from the United States. And that wasn't inherently part of the mission. It was just a one of those extra experiences I got while trying to network with other folks doing good things overseas.
Drew had asked about like what lessons you were taking from chaplaincy and then kind of back into the local church. And I saw that play out with my predecessor a bit. Well, he was a chaplain and there were terms, high church terms that I was not used to from my background that he had kind of brought with him because of the chaplaincy, you know, talking about the chancel and the narthex and things like that. And, and I'm coming in going, I don't know what those are. And I bet the folks that don't go to church on a regular basis don't either. But then I also got to see the value in knowing some history and heritage, even explaining, well, yeah, after I took over this church, I learned, well, you know, this is why we built the church facing this way because of this tradition. And he had a lot of history that I didn't have.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I don't think sometimes a lot of that isn't specific to your training as a chaplain. It's just that then that you work with other chaplains. So I work with Catholic and Lutheran chaplains overseas. That's actually a Navy base. And then the command that I was part of, it's a senior Army command on post and the senior command overall. But Navy owned the base, so it was Navy chaplains that really owned the chapel. And so we had Lutheran, Catholic, and it was kind of fun to sit around as a group and just share. And you do learn a lot from that. There was your comment sparked another thought, and I just lost it. but yeah, you do bring quite a bit back in, and a certain kind of respect for others' backgrounds. I basically conducted a Lutheran service while I was over there without being a Lutheran, in that the senior chaplain on post is going to be gone. He asked me to cover for him, and I wasn't going to change up their order of service or anything like that. A lot more readings than I'm used to. And it came to one line in a particular creed. I'm like, although I recited, I won't say that particular line, because you just find your ways of accommodating, and you realize at the end of the day, you believe a lot of the core issues, the same things. You got each other's back, and iron does sharpen iron. If you want to argue about it around a table at some point in a good natured manner, you can do that. If not, don't.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a practical learning experience.
Yeah.
Because there's a difference in learning about someone else's, even in our own faith's traditions in a book, versus learning about how it's practiced from the person who is practicing it. And I think that's very practical. But yeah, I was headed towards how did your church adapt and cover while you're away? Where did you guys go for an interim? And how did your church know you were involved in this before you got hired there? I didn't do the mental math on the dates of how long you've been pastoring and how long you've been chaplain.
Right. So I was a chaplain when I was hired, and I think people had different expectations of what that would be. And honestly, it didn't look like deployment was anywhere on the horizon either. So that was a bigger challenge than any of us expected. As a matter of fact, I was not the original guy. The original guy got pulled for health reasons, and they transferred me over to the maneuver enhancement brigade. So they did know ahead of time. And what was the first part of that question? I caught you with your microphone off, didn't I?
You did, and drinking water. The first part was, how did you go about finding an interim for that long?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I actually called David Upchurch with Lincoln Christian University. I'm an alum, and I've known him for a bit. And actually, when a lot of the civil disturbance stuff was going on in Chicago, I ended up there. So he'd helped us find people for just any given Sunday. But we actually found somebody who had left small church ministry pretty much post COVID. The church couldn't support him, and he had taken another job, to support his family, and he was able to do, pulpit supply for long term. Of course, what then happened is he got offered a really good job, an offer he couldn't refuse. So he actually took a pastorate about 2 months before he got back, and then DHF helped with that, as did David with Lincoln Christian, and they provided us with various speakers for about the last 2 months, I think, while I was gone. So, yeah, we had some continuity, but not as much as you might hope.
I know Rick would keep us up to date on the board in terms of praying for you, and I think he filled in for you a couple of times, maybe.
He did, yes. He's filling in while I'm on vacation for one of those Sundays, so...
So I guess the follow on and final question, I don't know how much time we've got left, or we could keep talking all day if this was up to me, but so what can we do for you, and not just you, but other chaplains? DHF has the ability, we're recognized and can support chaplains. So if someone was, one, interested in chaplaincy, what could we do to best prepare them for that, and to support current chaplains, just from a local pastor standpoint?
Right. Well, one of the things that, I'm part of my ecclesiastical endorsement. That's something that's necessary to become a chaplain. You have to be endorsed by a religious body that's recognized by the Department of Defense in order to become a chaplain, along with the, theological degrees and all that stuff. And when I started pursuing it, part of what most of us are part of, a church that was leaving the DOC. And that would not have been a good fit, to try and get endorsement through DOC. And that church happened to be led by Kevin Ray, who's one of the founders of DHF back when it was Disciple Renewal. And so DHF, if they endorse you for chaplaincy, they have standing with the NAE, National Association of Evangelicals, which has the larger endorsement that the DOD requires. So that was my path, actually, for ecclesiastical endorsement and getting into the chaplaincy, fulfilling the baseline obligations that take like 9 months to document and get you in the system and all that. So that's one. Just continuing to offer that to people who are part of DHF. And then I think, you know, at the local church level, probably recognizing the experience that you bring from chaplaincy really does benefit the church. I mean, I've done more counseling, more really in-depth, difficult things on the chaplain side, even than on the pastorate. But what that means is, you know, when I come to some issues here, it's not the first time. And they benefit from that. There's a lot of teaching that we end up doing as chaplains. You know, you do learn to do briefings and learn to do training and all those sorts of things. And so all those skill sets do come over to the church. So I think recognizing that, valuing it, and then accommodating the schedule when, you know, sometimes the army says go and you have to go. I found too, to be honest about it, the on the guard side, they're very good about the fact that I am in a pastorate, and because my current unit is, you know, 20 minutes down the road, I'm able to leave on Sunday morning and be here for my church, and then just make up that time somewhere else. And that's a discussion you have to have with individual commanders and things like that. But I've always found that the Illinois Guard was very good about that too. And our leadership is very good about valuing what the pastor then brings to the chaplaincy.
That kind of sparked something I maybe should have started with. Why did you become a chaplain?
Yeah, well, interestingly, there are benefits. Literally, TRICARE was one of them, which is the medical, anybody who's in the military, they know what TRICARE is. And, my youngest, there's 8-year difference between my middle child and my youngest child, which tells you that was not expected, and insurance was not going to cover it. So, I was looking at TRICARE, and I'd done 2 years of seminary in Texas. And then when I moved to Illinois, my scholarships didn't follow. I just couldn't afford to finish. And so the education benefits. So those two things actually led me into the National Guard. It is a long road to endorse as a chaplain. So I went ahead and enlisted because I needed that track here quick. but that was what brought me in. And then, it's been home ever since. There have been opportunities to go elsewhere and do other things. But, I found good mentors in my time in service, and this has always kind of been home. So,
is there a need for more chaplains now?
There is. There always is. So, and if they're ever interested, a good way to find out about it is go talk to another chaplain, because it is a difficult road, and the standards are pretty high. But when I started within Illinois, I believe there were 22 slots for chaplains, and we were overstrength. We had something like 26. And it doesn't always match up, you know, rank for rank where you need them. But over the years, that's declined. And we're short in a lot of our battalions. We're always looking. And we're looking for diversity in chaplains, too. We talk about perform or provide. There are services I cannot perform. And having somebody from a different background actually helps out with that. We're able to then refer them to another chaplain. And that helps everybody out. So yeah, the road was me wanting, you know, benefits, honestly. But if I was going to be in the military, I was going to be a chaplain. I was already a youth guy and an associate pastor serving with Kevin Ray. So
I don't think we can understate how much your EO stuff, your the counseling stuff, that it really helps you deal with people in the local church. I tell people all the time, I did EO the last 5 years I was in. And if it wasn't for that, I couldn't deal with the elder boards that I deal with, you know, having, you know, and honestly being able to look at yourself differently, have a little more patience with yourself. The temper kind of goes out a little bit when you have to deal with other things. Your rank, I think, helps too, especially being enlisted and then coming back in as an officer. I think that helps too. And having an understanding of what you can say, when you can say, and who you can say it to,
Right.
I think it really helps in a small church setting as well.
Yeah.
Help us non-military guys. What is EO again?
Equal opportunity.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and you talk about church board and all those sorts of things. And we all know churches can be difficult. Hospital for sinners, right? And sometimes you bear the brunt of that. And I think the military experience, you need to have a thick skin as a pastor. And the military experience probably thickened my skin some too in a way that I really probably needed. I know there are challenges that I've weathered that probably would not have done as well at earlier in my life and without that experience. You know, if you can handle a drill sergeant yelling at you, you know, you can handle an awful lot of things. And you know, along with that, the EO thing, when you learn what boundaries you need to preserve for other people, you need to protect for other people, it kind of helps you recognize the ones you need to protect for yourself too. I think that's a struggle that pastors face, is we want to help people all the time. And I've seen a lot of pastors struggle with maintaining boundaries that allow them to be healthy spiritually for the long haul. And I think that's something that definitely has come over from chaplaincy as well.
That's such a big need. And one of the things DHF does so well, one of the first books that most of our Zoom groups for pastors go over is that Peter Scazzaro, Emotionally Healthy Leader, because so many of us, you're right, we sprint. We don't plan for the marathon, and we just try to keep sprinting the whole time instead of stopping and resting and getting healthy. So
that was one of the big reasons I re-engaged with DHF. You know, there were all the moves, whether it was, you know, had been in Lovington and then went to Shelbyville and then finally made its way to First in Decatur and all of that. It wasn't just needing pulpit supply, but it was recognizing that you need the support of other clergy, other people who walk that path. And yeah, getting into the book group and doing all that sort of thing, you know, so regularly meeting in a format like this with, you know, four or five other pastors, you know, other servants is good. And again, I recognize that need for support, because at times I'd gotten that support on the military side, but, you know, I knew I needed it on the civilian side too. So.
Well, I think something else that probably would help, I know it helped me, I'm sure you the same way, is that military 20-year goal.
Yeah.
I think that if you have that mindset on the active duty or the reserve side or the guard side, when you apply that to the church, it makes it harder to just up and quit.
Right.
You know, when something goes wrong, you're looking for a way around because you've got that 20-year retirement goal.
And even just seeing the process play out, you know, on the military side, it's a big organization. It's a learning organization because there's constant turnover. It's a training organization. And that needs to be true of the church, you know. And, you know, not to be critical of some, you know, young new pastors come in full of fire, but the expectations aren't particularly reasonable. You realize you've got different people at different levels in their discipleship, and it's a process, you know, to work them through. And so I think I probably did bring that from the military too, watching, you know, even just seeing a unit go from point A, you know, which might be new, they're focused on individual tasks, as we call it, to sort of an end of a training cycle where they're doing things together and accomplishing big goals. And it's a process of years, and it's in a hierarchical organization. We're not in the church, we're not hierarchical, you know, we're pretty egalitarian. I think putting legs to what you were saying, having goals and knowing there's lots of intermediate steps, there's movements forward and there's movements back, and you just take it and you keep pressing forward, keep those goals in mind.
Well, Monty, is there any other parting piece of wisdom you want to share, or I can close otherwise?
I don't know. Let me look. I actually had some notes that I've not looked at all. I think probably one of the things too is just about chaplaincy that people don't know is we are you know, 100% confidential resource, which I think is worth knowing. You know, that might not be true in our individual churches. We're not, you know, Catholic. It's not like confessional and those sorts of things. But, you know, on the military side, we are, which kind of makes us a unique resource. And then I think the other thing, too, is I've gotten to do some cool stuff, you know, whether it's hang out of the back of a Chinook, you know, on the strap, or, you know, go to Poland and march across Poland with a whole bunch of other people doing a pilgrimage, or spending time in Djibouti, or, yeah, even being up in the middle of Chicago during, you know, a lot of the civil unrest, and just seeing how that that played out. There are opportunities to do things. Plus, you get to see things blow up sometimes, which is lots of fun. So I'll leave you with that as a parting gift.
Yeah, I don't think we can top that. I'm a Kentucky hillbilly, and, you know, my fun was on the family farm with bonfires and all kinds of activities that we probably shouldn't discuss.
Well, that's about the same speed. Yeah. I'm convinced that growing up is a myth. And so, yeah, going out and seeing them, you know, set off, you know, some C4 out in the middle of the woods at a training site is a lot of fun.
Yeah, when we grew up, we just moved from silly putty to serious putty, huh?
That's right.
Well, it has been great talking with you, Monty. It has been great having you here, Drew, again. And then if you've been listening or if you've been watching, we appreciate the whatever the appropriate interaction is, the like, the share, all those things, whatever the platform is. And we also would love for you to follow us and find out more about the ministry at discipleheritage.org. And hopefully we'll catch you on the next time wherever you get your podcasts.